Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 193 shopping days left until Christmas, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Hey, how's it going? My streak continues. I did know what that means this time.
Yeah. Yeah, what's going on, John?
Oh, God, not a thing. It's raining and it's pouring and we're all going to float away.
Something, something. I'm going to be snoring here in a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Fun times. And
exciting episode.
I know, right? It's just the most energetic start to every podcast. I love it.
Oh, man. If you watch what we watched, you'd understand.
Oh, absolutely. speaking of high energy, Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad?
Hey, guys.
Oh, hey, I didn't realize Brad was here. Hey, Brad.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Joe, didn't see you over there.
I can't see either one of you. What are you talking about? Anywho, so welcome back to this bizarre series we've somehow found ourselves in, where we're reviewing movies titled Let It Snow. This is the third and I promise you final entry in this series, because I do believe we've reached the bottom of the barrel. There is absolutely no way we could possibly get any lower than the film we cover tonight.
Yeah, I'm not watching that Hallmark thing. That ain't us.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, we're not doing that. But instead, we found something even more obscure, even less well-known than a 2013 Hallmark film. This is a film that comes to us from the years 1999 or 2001 or 2009, depending on what website you're using at that exact moment.
Definitively say this was not from 2009, unless it's a weird licensing thing.
Yeah, Amazon often does not know what they're talking about, so take that with a grain of salt. But yes, this is Let It Snow from... I'm going to go ahead and just call her shot. It's 1999. This is the most 90s.
It's 1999! No? Nobody?
Brett, I was dreaming when I wrote these notes, so sue me if I go too fast.
Thank you.
There it is. Yeah, this is the third and final Let It Snow, so let's let her rip. Guys, first impressions, what did you think?
Oh.
That was it. That's all you needed to hear.
John, you want to get a hand on this?
There was a period when Netflix streaming just started, you know, that you could just watch like whatever the hell random indie bullshit movies were on there, and that's what I do when I couldn't sleep. It was just like, yeah, I'll put on this movie that has DC Pearson in it, why not? And it was just always just random nonsense, like pretty forgettable after the fact. And this would have fit right in with all of those, just like just 90s, late 90s indie film circuit. I don't know if fodder's the right word, but you know what I mean.
What's the word? Leavens.
I mean, that's actually very appropriate given how they apparently shot this film, because Let It Snow was produced and filmed on what they refer to as short ends. Do you guys know what that means?
I do not. Tell us.
It's extra film left over from when they cut film. They cut it in editing.
Yeah, it's like it's basically extra film left over from the original productions. Like Hollywood studios shoot films on 35mm, and whatever small snippets are left over that weren't used, they kind of repackage them and can and ship them off to other smaller studios and smaller productions that can use them.
So they have maybe a limited amount of film for each take, which is why half of this film feels like a panic attack.
Yes, very much so. Like, this
okay,
is,
that explains a lot, I think.
This is a perfect end for this movie to talk about, because we haven't even told you what it is or what it's about yet, but just the vibe that it gives off is just the most manic. This movie feels like a heart attack. It really does.
Just imagine it if it was at higher speed, too. Not saying I did that, but maybe I did that at certain points. Oh, my goodness.
No, I couldn't. Like, once this thing, like, got its hooks in me in the first, like, 20 minutes, and I was like, okay, these are terrible people. Then it runs you through the ringer of making you watch these terrible people for 90 minutes, and I was glued to the screen. For better or worse, like, my attention was very much wrapped. I mean, I don't know if that's the right word or not, but, like, I was there. I was in it, and I couldn't get away. Sarah in this film keeps referring to James as a black hole, and, like, that's the perfect analogy for this movie. It's just a fucking black hole, and I couldn't escape it. And even after the film was over, I started to read up about it and research it, and once again, I just could not escape the vexing pull that this film had me under.
This is Joseph's hole. It was made for him.
This is my hole. I live here now. So, I mean, there's only one way. There's only one way out of this, and that's through. So, crack it open if you got it, baby.
Can check. What you working with?
This is from Two Pitchers Brewing. This is a Nordic Jam lager. Ooh. With Nordic fruits. It's got a picture of a Viking who has just murdered a giant pile of fruit, and he is enjoying the fruits of his labor.
Ah, that sounds delish.
It's very good. It's very sweet and very good. And I could kill a dozen of these. Does anybody else have anything to work with tonight?
I have this is from Front Royal Brewing. This is Decorating a Piece of Time IPA.
Ooh.
It's an IPA. It's pretty good. It's got a bit of a bite, which I like. I can appreciate it in an IPA. Not going to complain. Pretty good. Drinkable.
That's
drinkability is what you're looking for when you're consuming liquids. Drinkability is very high on the list of attributes you want. No, it's good.
I feel like
25.
I feel like we've talked about how douchey that is as an adjective, but you know what? It matters.
Or how non-descriptive it is as a descriptor.
Yeah.
Jonathan?
Man, I got some Windex here, but I'm not drinking it yet.
Yet. That's the operative word here.
Hey, man, I ain't making any solid plans one way or another for the future. All I know is there's Windex on my desk, so I was using it earlier. And the night is young.
Yeah.
Well, if I know anything from other independent films I've seen, it's that Windex fixes fucking anything.
That was an independent film?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. Right. You learn something new every day.
Yeah, My Big Fat Greek Wedding was an independent film and turned out to be one of the most successful independent films ever made, which is quite the opposite of the fate of this film. Because Let It Snow, also referred to as Snow Days, depending on where you are in the world, it apparently was a big hit on the festival circuit. Like, it played at, like, the AFI Film Festival. It played at Sundance, won a bunch of awards. Critics kind of sort of seemed to like it. And then it literally disappeared and vanished off the face of the fucking earth, I think. Because when I went to look up this film on Letterboxd to, you know, rate it and add it to my list of shit that I've seen, there are two reviews for this film, and they are both by the same person from the years 2012 and 2013.
Was it just a repeated watch, or they forgot they watched it and reviewed it again?
Who knows? I think it was a repeated watch. This film has exactly one fan out there, and nobody else apparently has seen it since.
There are 19 reviews on IMDb. The newest one is 2017.
Okay.
This film was found on the back of a milk carton. Have you seen me?
It looks like so many other films, but no, it's not the one you're thinking of.
No.
So I guess the best way to get into Let It Snow is to just, let's talk about the characters. Our dramatis personae, and I know that this is going to be difficult, Brad, but just fucking bear with me. So yeah, the two main characters of this film are James and Sarah. James, who's played by Kip Marcus, who also wrote and produced this movie, is your typical like sad sack indie rom-com character who is kind of sort of, he wants to be a free spirit, but he's not. And he just is looking for love. And he's just kind of a guy. And that's about looking all that his love. Character is.
He's looking for love in all the wrong places.
That is very true. But then Sarah, who is played by Alice Dillon, who is Mrs. Kip Marcus in real life, is there's really no other way to put it. She is like the prototypical manic pixie dream girl.
Thank you. Thank you. Somebody was going to say it. And thank you for being the one to say it. So is this pre or post Garden State? Because I know nothing about movies.
This is this is at least 5 years pre Garden State.
So she's the manic pixie dream girl.
Yes.
I'm sure there were other cinematic manic pixie dream girls before this, but you know what I mean.
But yes, she is very much of that tradition. Just the stock female character who is sort of, for lack of a better word, unique and weird. And she kind of lives in her own head, and she has way too many quirks for one human being. But that makes her lovable, quote unquote. Like, she has like this one quirk where it's like she hates watching the ends of movies. And I don't know what the hell to make of that.
I don't know. It's like somebody handed me a pile of lemons. I don't know what to do with this. No. It's
wait,
wacky.
You don't want to do with a pile of lemons?
No, you make lemonade. You know what I mean. Okay. Somebody handed me a pile of a pile of horse apples. How about that? You don't know what to do with horse apples. Yes. No, I don't know. For lack of something else to say, this movie is very much a product of its time.
Yeah.
She's a manic pixie dream girl type character, and she has all of these small sort of idiosyncrasies, which, you know, back in the day, so random would, you know, is seen as, I'm not saying it's a bad trait now, but it's like everybody's a little bit weird in their own way now. I think everybody kind of realizes that.
Too quirky for their own good. That describes basically every character in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Essentially.
The press kit makes a lot, and I guess a little bit the movie makes a lot out of the fact that James is part of a family curse where nobody can find, you know, a steady love interest. His grandmother, his mother, both, you know, had men walk out on them, so to speak. And it seems that James is destined to have the same happen to him. That's all. I'm just putting it out there.
The movie starts with this horrifying sort of childhood that James has had, where his father leaves home because he says something dumb about how he needs to be an I before he can be a we.
And that comes back to be a very big thread in this movie. So much as this movie has threads.
It's a Chekhov's gun kind of thing where, like, somebody says it at the beginning, so you know someone's going to say it at the end.
Yeah.
But, so his dad...
He, like, leaves for permanent Burning Man, basically.
Something like that. He goes to live in the desert and live off peyote or some shit. I don't know. He wants to not be dad material. So then Mom, who is played by Bernadette Peters, which the press kit, again, makes a lot of hay out of the fact that, hey, guys, we got Bernadette Peters for our movie. She kind of reacts to this by basically sleeping with every ethnicity of man she can find.
She's got to catch them all.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you've got your Italian guy. You've got your...
there's a big dumb Swede.
Yeah, there's a Nation of Islam character in there. There's, which, yeah, is definitely a choice. But
it's certainly is a choice, isn't it?
It certainly is a choice. In this, no, I almost said in this Christmas film, but this is not a Christmas film, is it?
No, Jordan? It's not. It's not.
It's barely even a winter film, because most of this movie, as the poster tells us, takes place in June.
So, is there a single scene in this movie that takes place at Christmas? I don't think there was.
I didn't catch anything, no.
There's, so one of the first scene where James meets Sarah happens in January.
Right.
Which is like the snow day part. Mm-hmm. And then another pivotal scene occurs during like the non-denominational snowflake Jake snowflake ball.
Right. Like the winter, and then, the winter formal, as it were.
Yeah. Yes.
And there's a scene at Easter.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't think we're qualified to talk about this movie, since it doesn't have any... There's the connection to Christmas is tenuous at best, but that's never stopped us before. Just look at friggin' Last Boy Scout.
The Last Boy Scout had more to do with Christmas than this movie.
Yeah, and that was very tenuous. But like, I was thinking about that earlier. Like, this series that we've completed here, it starts as kind of a nominal Christmas series, and then the second film kind of only pays it the barest of lip service, and then this one just does away with Christmas completely. Like, this is a series of us straying further and further from God's light, as it were.
Well, here's a question, actually. Is the song Let It Snow even about Christmas at all, or is it just about wintertime in general?
Winter.
I don't remember all the lyrics.
It's a winter song in the same vein as Jingle Bells. Yeah, it's...
But I believe the song doesn't make any mention of Christmas or Christmas trimmings,
no, but
if you will.
It's odd that we only sing this song at Christmas time, and on December 26th, this song goes away. We pack it up and put it away. Yeah.
Gets put up big time.
Yeah.
Huh.
Regardless of the fact that, you know, it snows well into April in most parts of the U.S.
In fact, most snowfall occurs after Christmas in most places.
That's true.
We get most of our snow in January and February here.
Yeah. Now, that's more meteorology than you get in the film, which I only say because Sarah, as a character, goes to college and then to London for her grad school to become a meteorologist.
As one does.
As one does.
Oxford, the famous meteorology school.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she first moves to New York City to study meteorology because that's where all the weather lives. But then...
It's at the forefront of weather.
Yeah, it's at the cutting edge of weather. And then James follows her because she decides for him, basically, that he is going to be a good cook. And so he decides to enroll in the Culinary Institute of America. And the film makes a lot of hay out of the fact that, no, those are the same initials as the Central Intelligence Agency.
Oh, shit, it is. I didn't get that. Wow.
Yeah. It's literally true. And, like, there are even title cards in this. Okay. We have to stop because...
Yeah, this film, movie has clerks-ass title cards.
This film uses title cards like Kevin Smith paid him to do it. Because, and it's mostly like lines of dialogue that are taken out of context, but there's one title card that literally says it cuts to 4 years later at the other CIA, because they keep making that joke and it's never funny. But we are getting,
sure isn't.
We're just shotgun blasting awful details. Let's try to pare down what this movie's actually doing, what it's about. I know, I'm sorry.
so many sighs. I'm sorry. I can't.
I'm sorry, but I'm sorry that this is the thing that we've decided to do with our lives.
So, you know how I Met Your Mother took like 30 seasons to just have the two main characters get together anyway?
Yeah.
At least this movie only takes 90 minutes to do that.
That's true, and at least this movie doesn't kill any major characters along the way. Spoilers for How I Met Your Mother. Wow, nobody cared about that but me. Okay.
The last movie was spending 45 minutes watching a woman slowly get murdered. This one is spending 90 minutes watching a man slowly grow a spine.
Barely,
for like one small moment.
He finds
the tiny piece of backbone in an otherwise gelatinous body.
All right, Jonathan. We have James, whose mother is unlucky at love, let's say, and his grandmother is like, oh, of course, no, love stinks. His grandma gives him the love speech. So he grows up. In high school, he meets the girl next door, literally Sarah, whom is in from Michigan. They develop a why aren't you two fucking relationship where they're BFFs. He goes off to cooking school. She goes off to school for meteorology. They never quite make it together. Eventually, she invites him for, the winter ball of some sort, just because, like, hey, it'd be weird if I went alone, and it'd also be weird if I didn't go, apparently. So he shows up. They kiss afterwards. Her roommate, who is Miriam Shore, who I really think that the producers were just mad that Jeanine Garofalo was as old as she was, told her it's like, if you want to know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, we're just citing Cosmo because it's the late 90s. She says, like, well, you know, if you love him, let him go, basically, is what she says. So she calls him up and says, you know, hey, that was totally a mistake. And he just completely backs down, like, oh, no, yeah, I agree. No, yeah, no, we shouldn't do that. No, no, that was
bad. He kind of accidentally calls her bluff. Like, yeah, I guess so. You're right. Click, bye.
And then they move
completely
apart.
To...
Yeah, he drops out of cooking school, goes to New York, just gets a job as a caterer. I did like the joke where he's like, so I went to the most unromantic place on earth and just immediately cuts to New York. that was a good joke. I appreciate that.
There are a small handful of like decent jokes and gags in this film, but they're all packaged around just this awful excuse for a romantic comedy.
Yeah, like, Stephen Colbert's entire experience was wonderful.
Sorry?
Stephen Colbert's entire like 30 seconds of being in the movie was wonderful.
Oh, the infomercial was very good. I really liked the gag with Sarah reading the book where it was like the dew point, the dirty details. It's like some meteorology book that they had made up.
Yes.
That was good.
I enjoyed the scene. There's a scene where after Sarah and James have their first kiss and she goes back to her apartment, goes to the bathroom, starts having this conversation with her roommate, and then her dad like bursts through the bathroom stall and starts talking with her about the whole situation, and then her mom walks in, and then some other guy
walks
in.
Martini in hand.
and every person in her life is just, hashing this out with her, and all of a sudden you realize, like, oh, she's talking to herself. Okay, that's clever. And then it ends, and the movie never does this again.
Yeah. So, yeah, then she comes back from England with a fiancé. He meets up with meets up with Beth, the former roommate, who looks kind of like Jeanine Garofalo in the way she is presented at first. Ends up getting very aggressively hit on by her.
In the intervening 4 years, she has turned into, like, a lounge lizard, basically.
Yeah. Sarah eventually comes back to her apartment where James and Beth have been. She finds that
What was the game plan here?
She was like, oh, I'm busy. Hey, Beth, can you go meet James and just, keep him from being lonely tonight or something? Bye.
Right, because James had somehow finagled, like, not necessarily a date, but, like, you know, just
a meetup.
A meetup with his old friend at a bar. And then he goes to the bar and finds her roommate, who is now just this weird, sex-crazed, wild person. And eventually, she takes him home to Sarah's apartment.
Yes.
And then she does a striptease/fashion show for him. And then Wearing Sarah's clothes.
It's
very
odd, right?
Like, it's extremely odd she basically initiates sex with him because, like, she completely strips naked and then goes into the bedroom and she's like, come with me, come on. And he's just like, nah. He goes to gets a beer out of the fridge and just sits down in the living room and just drinks four beers. She's apparently still in the bedroom waiting for him, but she never comes out and he never goes in until Sarah comes home and finds him sitting there drunk. And she's like, what the hell are you doing? And he drunkenly tries to explain what's going on. But even what's going on doesn't make a single fucking lick of sense.
Yeah. And then also to add to it, because this is the beeper era, she has a beeper that's constantly going off, and it's apparently her fiance or her boyfriend bugging her, being like, "Hey, so how about the marriage proposal? I know I just asked you like 10 minutes ago, but hey, how about it, huh? Hey, it's just me again. Beep, yeah, I know I beeped you 5 minutes ago, but hey, what's going on?
Can you do that again, but with a British accent?
Hello, hello, it's me, your boyfriend again.
Hello, governor.
Ring me back on me old beeper, why don't you?
Oh, now you got to do it in Cockney rhyming slang. What would be the Cockney rhyming slang for beeper? So beeper, we got to think about this. You guys keep going. I'm gonna have to think about this.
I don't mean to be a creeper, but answer me back on me beeper. I don't know. Good lord.
What is it?
That was a
like my big car. Hit me back on my big car, because cars beep.
Yeah. That's not bad.
Because it's a beeper. Or is it? No, it's supposed to be the thing that you reference rhymes with the thing. So beeper.
Oh my god.
Hit me back on my death sickle, reaper, beeper. I don't know, man. I'm done. I apologize to anybody. I apologize to everybody. Honestly,
I don't apologize to the British. I am sorry to everybody else.
Yeah, that this whole thing has been just culturally insensitive, and I apologize. The fact of the matter is that her boyfriend proposed to her over a beeper text, which in 1999 doesn't seem that ridiculous. No, hang on, wait. It's the most insane thing I've ever heard.
I thought she was out with him, and I think the implication was that he proposed to her while they were out, and she's like, "I need to think about it." And now he's giving her, you know,
no time
a pressure sale, which is absolutely the shittiest thing to do, short of proposing to somebody at a basketball game on a jumbotron.
He just texts her and says, "Why say no when it feels so good to say yes?"
So and weird. Joe gets it. So bad.
Okay, Big Tom Callahan, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Even taking that into as an assumption, like, okay, we're supposed to infer that he had proposed to her. All we see is just like, hey, yes or no on a beeper, and it's like, oh, and then she makes a phone call and then announces, yes, I just agreed to marry this guy that you haven't met yet.
I think it's supposed to try to be like a bait and switch, because she keeps like, oh, now this important business deal. Oh, business, because she's in marketing. So I think it's trying to be kind of coy, I guess. I don't want to call it trying to be clever, because that seems too mean. It's trying to be coy.
I thought it was really obvious, like, once it was like a yes or no thing. But
To be obvious to us, not obvious to the characters, though.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
Basically, she doesn't want to just drop that whole bombshell on him. Like, oh, by the way, I'm getting married, and I apologize. You need to leave. I get that, but it's a big leap, I guess, is all I'm saying. So then James decides that he's going to go to like open mic therapy night
ha-ha-ha New York jokes I can ever imagine.
Which is really weird, because I think they establish that as a framing device.
They try to.
They don't necessarily stick the landing, because we kind of forget. But
I mean, imagine Joe Dirt if there wasn't all of the asides with Dennis Miller in the middle of it. If it was just Dennis Miller was in it for 5 minutes at the beginning and 5 minutes at the end.
Yeah, like it's just the wacky adventure in between and no explanation for what the fuck's going on. But even then, the explanation barely gives you anything, because he's just standing there in front at a microphone talking to these people. You don't know what the context is for his jokes or his conversation or his set or anything. He's just like talking about this girl. He could be giving a motivational speech. He could be a comedian. We don't know. He's just rambling about nothing.
And there's only really three other characters in the show.
We haven't even talked about his BFF.
Yeah, Jamie. Is that his name?
Yeah.
No, he's Jamie. Mitch is his friend.
Mitch, yeah.
Mitch, who is a basketball star, goes to Harvard, becomes a stockbroker, like, marries his high school sweetheart, makes, like, every single, what do you want to call it, prototypical, like, correct decision in life, pretty much.
He becomes an adult the way you're supposed to become an adult, I guess. And then James, when put in that spotlight, is very much not doing any of those things.
And Mitch is kind of being an asshole throughout the movie, and he's trying to do a tough love thing, I guess, because he keeps talking to James like, here's you, here's reality, never the two shall meet, is the recurring line that Mitch uses.
And he keeps trying to get him to get his shit together, and it never seems to work out, because James is a fucking train wreck of a human being.
We have there's a through line for this movie where James, when he comes up against something, tries something new. And one of the weirdest ones is when he sees this promotional, like, infomercial with Stephen Colbert about good handshakes. He, like, decides he's going to become a Wolf of Wall Street and, like, bursts into Mitch's office.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre. Like, it's out of so many bizarre things. I don't know where to start.
This movie has so many kind of, like, recurring, not even gags, but just like recurring things that it's kind of hard to keep track of them all. Because do you even remember the clapping thing? That's a huge one.
Clapping thing.
Yeah. Okay.
The clapping, envisioning.
The thing Sarah teaches him early on is you clear your mind of everything, then clap, and whatever you think of, like kind of like whatever makes you happy, clap, and then that's what you should do. That's how he decides to become a chef to begin with. He's like thinking about what's the thing that ever made him happy in life. It was cooking for his mom when she was sad.
Pierogies.
Right, and even that, like, the flashback scene that you get, it's never made clear whether it's just a cute kid trying to do something nice for his mom or whether he was, in fact, a good cook as a child. It's
very ambiguous as to which it is.
Very ambiguous, and even after he goes to culinary school, where his brother has a cameo as a tyrannical chef who yells at him, he doesn't show any signs of having ever been a cook at all until like the very end of the movie, when he actually cooks a meal for his two best friends. And, oh, it's a nice gesture just to show that he's becoming an adult and getting his shit together. But until that point, no, nothing. And, looking at my notes now, I realize we skipped an entire section of this film where James has this weird montage of just going on random dates with random women to get over Sarah.
I think it's supposed to be like whole relationships, even.
Maybe, but because they all kind of play out the same way, but at the same time, so they just kind of cut all of them together.
It's a montage, but...
Really clingy girl... Not the one who's like, I know this is the first day I think I love you, but the first one who shows up naked. When she shows up naked, she's like, happy 1 week anniversary. So these are supposed to be like a series of failed relationships that he's had.
Right. Like failed quick relationships, I assumed. I'm hoping. Good Lord. Some of these people are...
Yeah, like he makes an international call from his like short-term girlfriend's apartment. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's a real dick move. And the thing that winds up just ruining all these relationships is the fact that they will always find out that he is still pining after Sarah, which is, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, women, am I right? Ah, things where it's the women are just like, who the fuck is Sarah? Like, you know other women? Like, you're aware that other women exist who aren't me? That's the vibe all three of these women get off. You don't really get the idea from them that, like, hey, like, why did you yell Sarah's name last night? Because that's totally not my name. There's nothing like that, you know? It's just always like, who's Sarah? And it makes them seem like the psychotic ones when, no, James is the asshole because James is the common thread here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's it's very poorly laid out.
And I think, honestly, with everything else going on in this movie, I think it might just be a, hey, New York, am I right? Joke. And that's it.
Beautiful, crazy women. Hey, I'm walking here.
Yeah, because this is a film that came out kind of at the same time as, like, you know, Sex and the City coming out and being a big thing. And I get the feeling that they tried to tap into a little bit of that, even if you know, it didn't necessarily work. It's there. It's the same kind of vibe. And it definitely dates this shit.
When we were talking about James as a common thread, can I talk to you all? Can we all relate on, I don't know if it's the way it's written or the way he's acting. I think James is a thoroughly unlikable character, and I find myself... I find it very difficult to care whether or not he achieves his goal at the very end of this. I don't know, man.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
100%. 100% you are correct.
I think that might be the main problem that I have with this movie, honestly.
Yeah, he doesn't have very many redeeming qualities to go on with the quirks. Like, the quirks would be fine if it turned out he was, like, a solid person.
A heart of gold.
Yeah, sure. It would be fine if he was a solid person that just needed a little direction, but, like, man, speaking as someone who has no fucking idea what I'm doing with my life, he has no fucking idea what he's doing with his life. Ever.
Yeah, if he could just, like, succeed at one thing, at one aspect of his life, there would be something there for us to root for him about and over. But he is just listless and terrible and a failure at everything all the time.
I mean, if it had a recurring theme of showing him as being a good cook, even though he didn't finish culinary school, but, like, and without the degree, you can't get the job at the fancy Michelin star restaurant, you know, that'd be one thing. Like,
right.
If he was working, like, shitty, greasy spoon jobs because he, as a fully trained, you know, fancy chef, just because he didn't have the degree for it, you know, that'd be one thing. But no, it's just, it doesn't show him, it shows him, like, running headlong from success or even, like, kind of, like, emotional fulfillment at every given opportunity.
And yeah. I think that's what the movie is, it's kind of going for, because we have that, like, we have that 5-minute redemption arc at the end, kind of, where he goes and talks to his mom, and then he's like, okay, well, I'm not going to get Sarah, but I got to get my life together. And he re-enrolls, and he's hanging out with his friends, and he's improving himself, and he's kind of found, he's earned the power of self-respect. And it's like, in that small moment, he becomes a more likable character. But the rest of the movie is much poorer for him being the way that he is for the rest of the movie.
The best part is, he didn't have to do any of that, because in the end, Sarah just realizes, wait, I don't actually like Peter. What the fuck am I doing? And she just goes back to James.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just that simple. And, like, and James being a terrible person with a very slight redemption arc at the end does not negate the fact that Sarah is also a terrible person with pretty much zero redeeming qualities herself. And,
thank you.
But, and, like, the moment you see them have this meet cute, and, like, she explains her, her, like, terrible quirks to him, and he explains his terrible quirks to her, and you kind of realize, oh, these two people are destined to not be together because they're both insanely broken. It's not ever going to work, and yet they, like, keep butting their heads against a wall to try to make it work. And, like, it's just one of those things, like, if you've lived on this earth long enough, you just know that, like, certain types of people just are not going to work for you. And I just see these two characters, and I just think, this is neither, I want to be around neither one of these people. They're destroying my will to live.
Can I say it is really adorbs that the two got together in real life and seem to have a happy, successful marriage. Good for them. I'm sure they're good people.
That is the silver lining to this film, for sure.
Yeah. For anyways, sure. Sorry, Johnny Five. What you were going to say?
I said, the problem is that the biggest thing keeping them from each other is just themselves, because they're both like, oh, no, we're friends. That would be weird, wouldn't it? Ha, 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 ha. It's been the entire movie doing that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's like the first 45 minutes of the movie are basically just fuck already the movie.
Yeah. And everyone telling them to, and they just don't. Until, yeah, like, it's too late, and they can't, and then they won't. Until James has to basically force the issue at the very end.
By getting into a food fight with her fiancé at the rehearsal dinner.
But yeah, so they get back together. It's a thing where, like, they get back together because it's snowing. Like, that's the thing that brought them together, and that's the thing that ultimately reunites them, is that, oh, it's snowing. Hence the title of the film, Let It Snow. Is that anything? I don't know anymore, guys.
The movie tries to make it a thing, but it's really not. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's trying to cash in a check that it doesn't have the money for, is all I'm saying.
It's trying to write a check that it doesn't even have its checkbook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. And
because it it tries with this vague theme of Let It Snow, but even at the end, like, it starts snowing because they get together, if you make chronology and causality be the same thing.
Basically, yeah. And I don't want to cast aspersions on, like, the type, like, the people who actually wrote the movie, but, like, that strikes me as a very, like, the type of people who would write this movie, that's how they think the world works. And I don't get the sense that the people who wrote this movie have watched too many romantic comedies before.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem with this movie, from my where I'm sitting, is basically, it's 2021 and this was 1999.
Right.
It is very, very much a product of its age.
Yeah, it is trying to hop onto a bandwagon that has very much left the station.
But at the time, it was there.
Even at, yeah, at the time, yeah.
No, yeah, yeah, at the time, we could probably go find at least like 50 more movies like this of about the same quality that don't have anything even less to do with Christmas, therefore we wouldn't watch them. But I mean, this doesn't seem to be too different from other things that came out at that time, in my opinion. It's just, man, it's, I'm trying to think of like another comparison for a movie you can't really watch anymore. Not because like, oh, that's really fucking racist. Just a movie where none of this makes sense anymore.
What I had brought up earlier, I haven't watched it in probably 15 years, but I'm sure Garden State hasn't aged particularly well either, and that's cut from the exact same cloth as this movie.
You guys, Chase the Gaming is right there. They're not doing the same things, but they're very much like operating from the same playbook. And yeah, neither one has aged well. I'll just say it, put it that way.
Yeah, but at least the reason this movie doesn't age well is just because it's like, all right, 90s kids, what are you doing? Whereas yeah. Chase the Gaming is more just like, wow, Kevin Smith, you have a really big problem with like non-hetero people in general. Like, what the fuck?
Right. That movie's got its own share of problems, but I'll say this for Let It Snow. About halfway through this movie, my girlfriend Nikki got up and left the room. About 5 minutes later, she came back and said, I had to go take some aspirin because this movie is giving me a headache.
I get it.
I'm not kidding. We were watching this movie and trying to figure out what the fuck was going through these two characters' heads, and we could not really make heads or tails of either one of them. And like every choice is the poorest one they could make, and it always makes things worse. And I get that that's kind of how movies are supposed to go, but something about this just never struck me as being particularly, realistic's not the word I want to use, but.
This movie is very cartoony in a lot of ways, which is the weird tone of it. Like when he's quitting culinary school, he goes to the bursar's office and gives her all the pans, and then like does like a Bugs Bunny, like grabs her by the lapels and kisses her thing. There's a lot of really odd stuff like that going on in this movie.
And then apparently gets back into cooking school by doing the exact same thing. Like she shows back up in like a detective disguise to like give him his cookware shit back. It's very odd.
Like I get what they were going for, but again, it just doesn't stick the landing.
It's
you can't really have your cake and eat it too in this case. It's trying to do two different things, I feel.
It's not wacky enough for the wacky scenes that are in it. It's not sentimental enough for the sentimental scenes that are in it. It kind of hits a weird middle ground where I don't want to say none of it quite works, just none of it quite works together.
Yeah. It's a little scatterbrained overall, I would say.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would argue a lot scatterbrained, but then we're just kind of debating over degree here. So.
No, I would say a lot scatterbrained as well. Yes. It did have
pretty good scenes and pretty good jokes in it. I really liked the character, the guy at the open mic who kept telling stories about his wife, and it basically seemed like the punchline to all of his stories were just going to be like, so then I cut her throat.
Oh, the stalker guy where he's like, a restraining order. What's a restraining order? I go through her garbage every night. Like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was all right.
Or was it that guy who like his wife? I wrote this one down because it amused me. His wife said, "Living with you is like living in Ethiopia. I'm always hungry and I'm never wet."
Yes,
I doubt that was the one. Oh boy! Oh,
yikes! Well, okay, gents. So, Let It Snow is, I think we can agree, a gigantic mess. If anything else,
yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, let's jump on over to the crankometer, unless y'all have anything else to add to this.
I was going to mention, it reminded me a little bit of if they made a live-action Doug the After Years.
Oh, my God.
Douglas Yancey funny.
Yeah, there's
all grown up and in New York.
Yeah, there's absolutely on YouTube somewhere like a fake trailer for a live-action Doug sequel like that, where
I've seen that. Yes,
the one thing that sticks out is Roger gets Patty pregnant.
Yep.
Oh, I'm glad I wasn't the only one that thought.
We'll find
of that
for the show notes.
Oh, I found it. I'll put it in the show notes.
Also, put Helter Skeeter in the show notes too.
Yeah, yeah, do it.
Why not? Why not? So, yeah, let's jump over to the crankometer. If you're just joining us, where the hell have you been? If you just
why do you start listening to podcasts like 50 minutes in? Got it.
7 years and 50 minutes in. But if you're just joining us, the crankometer is our patented XY axis for rating Christmas movies. The X axis is how Christmassy the film is. It's the Christmas quotient. And the Y axis is how good the film is. So, gents, Let It Snow 2009/1999 edition. How Christmassy is this?
We touched on this before, but I think the only connection is the title of the movie shares the title of a song that we listen to around Christmas time.
Yeah.
And now my question is, does that warrant a -5, or are we going to give it at least 1 point for having the title of the song in?
Don't we usually save our -5s for like bad faith,
like morally reprehensible? Yeah,
yeah.
So -4 or zero?
You say a zero?
I'm saying
zero.
I'm saying zero, or we give it like a score that's not even on the chart. Like we give it like a C or something.
We get out the Wingdings and give it like the semaphore flag.
Yes.
Yeah, like the x-axis score is just no,
non-applicable.
The
no.
x-axis is the x-axis is the emoji of the woman shrugging.
It's a null entry. There's just nothing.
Yeah. And then we're going to put that emoji on the y-axis. Where? How good is this?
No. Back to the x-axis.
Okay.
First.
Okay.
Maybe
okay.
Like a -1.
I get what y'all are saying because like there's no Christmas to rate in this.
I think we could have rated it a lot lower if they had used that to try to like pump it up in aftermarket sales as like a Christmas movie. Like a couple of movies that we've, you know, movies that we watched are very tenuously related to Christmas, but then they'll like change the poster to have Christmas stuff on it.
Like
where they're like,
or like
you
the
can
opposite
get
how
some
Christmas with the Coopers, then when they released on video around Valentine's Day, suddenly it's Love the Coopers.
Hey, guess what? The original title for Love the Coopers, Let It Snow.
Really?
Uh-huh.
You're not going to make us do another Let It Snow.
Excuse me, I'm going to turn my microphone off for a minute and barf.
No, when I was trying to Google Let It Snow, like 4 or 5 entries came up, and one of them was Love the Coopers. And like that's an alternate title for the movie in other parts of the world, is Let It Snow.
Yeah, I guess I'm willing to give this a -1 because you have a movie that's set partially at winter. You titled it after a song that only gets played in Christmas movies. Why didn't you have a Christmas scene?
The film takes place in New York City, arguably the most Christmassy city in the world, aside from, you know, Bethlehem, I guess. Why not have a scene in this film take place at, you know, the giant Rockefeller Center Christmas tree? At the very least. And I guess the answer to that is money, which they didn't have. So I'll give them that one.
I mean, you could also argue since the lead character is Jewish, maybe Christmas doesn't matter that much to him, which is totally fine.
I mean, that is certainly.
I think I'm giving the movie too much credit because Christmas is something that happens to everybody, whether they want it to or not. At this point, honestly.
Yeah, like he goes to an Easter dinner, so they play with that joke. They just play with it at the wrong time of year.
Right.
Yeah.
They just a wasted opportunity, which is another thing that we kind of often
bandy about.
Yeah, about is just how much wasted opportunity is there. So
I'm going to go with my original note that I put. I'm going to say a negative one. I think a negative
cool
one.
I'm okay with that because,
it's kind of like if you have the words chainsaw and massacre in your movie title, someone better get killed with a chainsaw.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam. Adam Marcus, writer of Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Nobody gets killed with a chainsaw in Texas Chainsaw 3D.
No, I don't know. I'm just saying the director of this movie wrote Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. Got the joke now. Wait, thank you.
He did that. He also did.
Jason Goes to Hell is.
Jason Goes to Hell and Texas Chainsaw 3D. Yeah. Did both.
Yeah.
Wow.
We didn't even mention that. The director, Adam Marcus, his first feature before this was Friday the 13th Part 9, Jason Goes to Hell. Which his brother Kip was also in as apparently a major character who, as far as I know, becomes Jason Voorhees in the movie.
He also did that Val Kilmer movie Conspiracy.
Yeah. Which I haven't seen. I don't know anything about it, honestly. But I'm interested in watching it now, to be honest. He's also done, a direct-to-video Christmas film called Secret Santa, which we can maybe talk about, during Home for the Horror Days this year.
Yeah, that sounds like it might be a fun train wreck, let's say that. The only names I recognize off the poster are, in fact, Adam Marcus and Deborah Sullivan, the husband-wife team that wrote this movie as well.
Right. So, yeah, we'll put that one in our back pocket for later. The thing that offended me the least about this film is its use of Christmas. So I'm okay with a negative one. And the for the y-axis, boy oh boy, nothing about this clicked for me, and
I'll say we have absolutely watched worse.
Oh, we have. We certainly
have.
Like aggressively worse movies, but this one is just like nonstop baffling decisions by characters that I don't understand. And it made me feel like I was going crazy. So, in that much, like, I got some entertainment out of it. It's probably not what they were intending, but I got something out of it. So
this movie, it's we've definitely seen worse. But I think a lot of those movies that are worse, you can understand their primary motivation was making money.
I don't know about this one. Feels like someone's. I don't want to say passion project, but yeah.
It had to be their passion project. I guess this was a star
Pet
vehicle for...
Better, yeah.
Yeah. This was a star vehicle for Kip Marcus, who played James. So, I mean, he got what he wanted, I guess.
I'm gonna put it out there. Second worst movie we've watched this year.
What do you mean he got what he wanted? Married to the actress who played Sarah?
I was about to say, yeah, he got the girl in the end.
Okay. And well, Brad is saying that the only thing we watched worse than this is Rhapsody.
Well, you know, friends, it is June, and we have watched, a grand total of 6 films? So it's not like there's a lot to pick from.
I suppose. But we have a lot of negative films already.
This is
definitively the worst Let It Snow that we've watched,
yes,
right?
The Let It Snow has gone downhill.
Yes, this started out as a wonderful joke, and it turned out the joke was on us because every decision we made after that initial joke was the wrong one.
The problem is
just like the protagonist of the last two movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, folks. Yeah. So, hey, we need a score for the y-axis. I'm gonna go ahead and say it: -4. Like,
yes. Yeah. That was mine.
It's weird, and that's the only positive point I'll give it. And it's just it baffled me to no end.
It's very strange. Maybe don't watch it though. It's on Prime, but don't.
I'm sure they went into this with the absolute best of intentions. And the press kit, which we'll also put in the show notes if you want to read it, you can tell they're really trying. They're trying so hard, but none of it translates well. None of it works. It just, nothing clicked for me, and I hated it. I'm sorry, but I hated it.
Yeah, I had a pretty bad time too.
It feels like a couple of other movies kind of put together, and by that I mean like the whole curse thing, like, feels a lot like that fucking Dane Cook movie Good Luck Chuck, which I think came out, I'm almost certain came out after this. And then a lot of the kind of the wackiness and like the weird like fantasy cutaways really felt like Ally McBeal-y, or even like we said, Doug like.
So in the IMDb, like, users who watch this would also enjoy, it's like Ally McBeal and Doug. All right.
And even with it being like set in New York, it still doesn't feel that New York-y either. Like, we've all seen movies that definitely have like huge like New York vibes.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that, but you hit it on the nose too.
It definitely. It feels like a bunch of.
This could have taken place in Cincinnati.
Yeah,
that's not what I was gonna say. But yeah, pretty much. It feels like a bunch of like, kind of seeds of ideas that all just kind of got mixed together, and none of them really had a chance to grow too much. Because I don't objectively hate too many things in this movie, but it's just like, well, that would have been cool if they carried it out. That would have been cool if they ran with it. You know, it would have been cooler if the movie had more weird, wacky cutaways. It would have been a completely different movie, but it probably would have been better. It would have been cooler if it was more of a New York-y movie. It would be a lot different of a movie, but again, it would be better.
Yeah, like, there are individual scenes that work, that make, like, that are make creative sense, and I'm like, okay, that's an interesting choice. And then the movie just doesn't stick with any of them.
I wholeheartedly agree. Yeah, it's hard to pin down anything that I, like, actively really disliked about this movie, but it just didn't come together at all.
Yeah. I guess what I'll say is, this is a film that, like, having seen it now, I feel like I need to show it to people just to make sure that I'm not actually, like, crazy. Like, that, like, this is weird, right? You guys notice this too? Like,
I think a sample size of 3 is pretty good. I think we all are kind of vibing the same way on this movie.
Yeah, looking at reviews on IMDb and Amazon, like, a lot of the reviews are from long, long ago. Especially all of the good reviews are from, like, 99, 2000.
Yeah.
It's also really weird to look on IMDb and find someone who's, like, user for 21 years.
Yeah, really.
We are ancient.
Yes.
We will soon return to dust.
Oh, God. Please, someone sweep me up.
Just pour my ashes into the trash can, please.
Yeah, that's where I belong. Speaking of the trash can, I have a new cat now.
Oh, did you name it Forky?
No, his name is Oscar. Until someone can prove that his name is something else, he's Oscar. We found him. He's a little too friendly to be a stray, but he also doesn't look like he has a home previously, so got one now.
Maybe he's the fugitive at large. You better watch out.
He is not in his 20s.
Maybe in cat years.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe. We'll see. Watch out. I mean, he's... What's that?
I was going to say, watch out. He might be a cat with a knife.
Oh, he's safely locked in the bathroom away from the other cats. They are doing the thing where you keep the cats away from each other, but close enough that they can smell each other and start to tolerate the existence of each other before they have to actually interact. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, as for this movie, I feel like a -4 would make me feel mean, but also a -3 seems like giving it too much credit. And yeah. I know we don't do half scores, so I'll go with -4 with the understanding that, like,
an attempt was made.
Yeah, and I don't want to say that we're not the audience for this movie, but we're not, because we weren't the ages we are in. We're not the target audience because we weren't in our 20s in 1999.
I was watching Pokemon on the WB when this came out. Like, I'm not the target audience.
No, yeah. Like, this... In 1999, we were more likely to be obsessed with The Matrix and very much not this. And that's fine. Time makes fools of us all. So all I can really rightly say is that thank God this joke is over and we can start watching other things.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we've finally been released from this prison.
It's too bad that we already watched Jingle All the Way, because then we could find two movies called Jingle Bells and watch those two first.
Oh my God. No. Hey, speaking of Jingle All the Way. So I found out the star of this film, Kip Marcus, his main credit before this movie, he played Ward Cleaver Jr. on the 80s reboot of Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah.
Which was
new Leave It to Beaver.
The new Leave It to Beaver, which was created by Brian Levant, who is the director of Jingle All the Way.
Wow.
It all comes around full fucking circle, guys. Good Lord. Oh, well, folks.
Boy, oh boy.
That's Let It Snow. If you really want to watch it, it's on Amazon Prime. It's on Tubi. It's an hour and a half long. Show it to some friends and prepare to be baffled.
The type that you want to have like a nostalgia trip for like quirky 90s bullshit, this is some quirky 90s bullshit.
It sure is. Yeah. But you know what? An episode of Ally McBeal is a lot shorter. And I think that's where we're going to have to leave it for this this episode. So, hey, if you want to yell at us on the internet about this episode or past episodes, tell us what you want us to review in the future. You can email us anything you want at xmascreeps@gmail.com. And do all the fun stuff that podcasts tell you to do, like subscribe, go and leave reviews on Apple or wherever. Do the thing. Tell your friends about the show. We love it. We love having listeners who actually enjoy the show. So let us know. Let them know. Do all of that. So next time on the show, I promise it will not be another Let It Snow. You have my word.
If we watch a movie that's actually good, I might be able to convince Karen to come on. No promises, though.
Muppet Family. All I'm saying is Muppet Family Christmas is right there.
That's true. But yeah, so that's Christmas Creeps, everybody. Happy June. Try to stay cool out there, everybody. And we will see you very shortly.
Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
So yeah, for Christmas Creeps, I have been Joseph Wade.
I'm Bradford.
I'm Johnny Five, the human robot. And I'm going to go watch some reruns of The Critic. Not reruns, but I'm going to go watch The Critic.
They're all reruns now. Achi machi.
Hey. Good night, everybody.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go,
Let's itch now!
It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I've brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low.
Let's itch now! Let's itch now! Let's itch now!